Hello, hello, hello.
You want to do the intro?
Hey guys, this is On, and I'm back with another week of Legacy Podcast with Stefan. It's been a while, and this is episode 4, just for record keeping. How you doing, Stefan?
I'm good. We're going to do a quick one tonight about a couple new cards from Conspiracy.
Quickie. Yeah. So what do you like so far?
For Legacy play, I'm pretty convinced that the only two cards that are going to see play are the Sanctum Prelate and the Recruiter of the Guard.
Okay. Those are actually pretty good cards. I've been seeing a lot of people getting excited for the Sanctum Prelate. Just so for people who haven't been keeping track of the spoilers, I'll read the Prelate and the Recruiter. So the Prelate is one generic white for a 2/2 human cleric creature. As Sanctum Prelate enters the battlefield, choose a number. Non-creature spells with converted mana cost equal to the chosen number can't be cast. So it seems like a pretty cool hate bear there. The Recruiter of the Guard, it's 2 generic and a white for a 1/1. When it comes into play, you may search your library for a creature card with toughness 2 or less, reveal it, put it into your hand, and shuffle your library. So it's kind of a reprint of sorts of the Imperial Recruiter, and it's gotten a lot of people excited, myself included.
I think that thing's going to be very good.
And you're referring to the Recruiter?
Couple decks. Huh?
You're referring to the Recruiter? It's going to be good?
Yeah, I think the Recruiter is going to see play in Death and Taxes, play in Ulduran. I don't see it sliding into like another popular existing archetype. I think it's those two.
Not even Dark Maverick for the Recruiter? Any chance?
They already have. Well, what are you going to get? Like Scavenging Ooze, Kasali Bridemage, Stoneforge?
Yeah.
I guess those are some good targets.
Doesn't seem too exciting for that deck, I guess, now that you say that. Yeah, I guess you can find some hate and blow up some artifacts or enchantments. Getting the ooze is fine, but then you can, those two cards, you can get it with the Green Sun in much more streamlined fashion, so yeah, I guess it doesn't seem too good.
I don't think they're looking for a fifth Green Sun effect, right?
Yeah. You're right. That's fair. Fair point. What about the Prelate? The Sanctum Prelate. What do you think about that?
I think it's going to see... again, for existing archetypes, I think it's going to see play in the existing ENT shell. Anywhere else, either. Reason being is because it obviously you don't want the Prelate to hit your spells, so Prelate is typically, I imagine, not going to be on one because you have Swords to Plowshares and Aether Vial.
Right.
I think it'll be on 2, 0, 2, 3, 4 against Miracle 6.
Do you know if you can choose 0? Like, I don't know if it's technically a number.
I think you can choose 0.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Sure.
I'm getting all tricky. Like, can you choose 0? Judge!
Yeah, I think you can choose 0. I see being in D&T because most of their spells aren't creatures, right?
True.
I mean, they are creatures, so they're not going to be turned off by the Prelate.
You're right. Yeah, I know what you meant. That's true. The thing with the Prelate, like, it seemed like you're a lot more excited about it than I am. I personally don't think the prelay will do a lot because it costs 3 mana, and it kind of reminds me of Council's Judgment when the card was spoiled. Everyone was, you know, really excited, freaking out, glad that they printed a card to get around True Name Nemesis' you know, hexproof ability. So, but with looking back, Council's Judgment didn't see as much play. I mean, it does see play, but not in as great of a quantities as a lot of people, I think, initially thought it would. It's typically a one of in the sideboard, sometimes one of in the main. So I think this card, though its effect is very unique and potentially powerful in the right matchup, I'm thinking of Storm. I just don't see it being played in great numbers because, again, it costs 3 mana, and 2 of that is white-white. So it's even harder to ramp into it with, you know, mana birds and stuff. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's very, the 2 white, I think, hurts it a lot, and the fact that it costs 3, so you're really hoping that you have your mana dork and the right colors to ramp into it on second turn, which is probably the turn that's crucial, because if you're casting it au naturel coming down on a third turn, it's just going to be much less impactful, and most of the spells that your opponent's going to want to cast, especially like say Storm for example, it might be a little bit too late at that point.
I agree. I don't see it as a card to beat combo. They already have Thalia for that. I see it as more of a card to beat control. Because against lands, you can name 2, and against miracles, you can name 6.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. I haven't. Maybe that's why I'm not rating it that card as high as a lot of other people. I'm looking at it mostly as a hate bear against combo. But now that you kind of brought up an interesting point, because Death and Taxes does have is really set back by a Terminus. So, yeah, if you can name 6 and have Mom protecting the prelate, that definitely brings the Death and Taxes matchup against Miracles to be much closer.
I think that it might even be advantaged if they put 1 or 2 prelates in their deck. It's definitely, I definitely see your point. The 3 CMC and Death and Taxes, there's a lot of things, including the new Thalia and the Recruiter, competing for 3 CMC spots.
Yeah. It's definitely a problem of having too much wealth of great 3 drops. I really like the new Thalia, and I guess we can talk about it a little bit later, but the prelay, yeah, it's at a point in a curve where a lot of competing creatures are there. But
absolutely.
I guess it kind of lends itself kind of what you're saying. And now that you're mentioning it, I think you can run 1 main. I think the folks are going to run the recruiter in the deck so they can go get the prelay only when they need it. That seems a lot more reasonable. It just seems a lot more reasonable now that I'm thinking of it in terms of playing alongside the recruiter as a 1-0 fetch target. Seems more reasonable.
Right. How many of each do you think are going to be in the new Death and Taxes lists?
I think recruiter would just be 2 copies.
Okay.
It just seems really bad if you run all 4 recruiters. I'm not sure if there's even space. You know, I
think 1 or 2 as well.
Yeah. But that's the thing with cards that search out other cards. You know, like the tutor cards, Enlightened Tutor. I guess Stoneforge is the exception where it's the tutor where you really want to play for. But it's like drawing a card.
Right. Yeah, cantrips.
Yeah. Yeah, this recruiter, I just think, like you said, I'm with you. It's either one or two copy. But then it's enough. It's enough to make the whole deck a lot more consistent. Because that's one thing that I've been talking with Denny a lot about, Death and Taxes. Oh. And this is a common concern for a lot of people who play Legacy. They really like Death and Taxes, but they would never want to play the deck. And one of the things they told me, these people who want to play them, is that it doesn't run Brainstorm, and it lacks the consistency of the blue decks. So I think Recruiter is going to allow Death and Taxes players a little bit more consistency for the card that they need at the right time. So, yeah, that's kind of exciting now that I think about it.
I think, I'm not sure if it's going to be one or two, but have you realized how absurd that thing is with Flicker Wisp if you get it set up?
That's the first thing I thought of. Because, you know, someone was mentioning if you terminate, the opponent terminates you, you play the recruiter getting Flicker Wisp, you know, Aether Vow the Flicker Wisp into play, and then you flicker out the recruiter and just, yeah, it gets silly really, really quick.
Yeah,
and you just build up your board. Yeah, the terminus did nothing basically, and that to me is really exciting because it shows me that there WotC is gonna, you know, hopefully start printing cards that allow decks like Death and Taxes to fight through a terminus, because before the recruiter, it's kind of rough to come back from a terminus if you're playing Death and Taxes. But now it's just like not a big deal, you know.
You can play
out to it. It's fine.
Violent 3 set up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Flicker Wisp is such a sweet card. I talked to one of the Death and Taxes player, you know, Sheldon, and he that's his favorite card in the whole deck. He says Flicker Wisp is the backbone of the deck, and it's definitely very effective. It wins him games all the time, but it requires you to be super familiar with the format and your own deck, obviously, to really take advantage of things, because you can outplay people and you can come back from games you have no business winning. So,
oh man, all right, yeah. And then have I sold you on the preload a little bit?
A lot more now that, you know, I think I was looking at it from a very narrow perspective, because I didn't see it as a card to be control, you know. And in my heart of hearts, I felt like the recruiter, getting Flicker Wisp, getting more recruiters, just might be enough gas to get there. Obviously, they can, in response, Sword to Plowshares your recruiter in response to the Flicker Wisp trigger, all that. Sure,
yeah.
Right. They can do stuff like that. But now that I think about it, the prelake does seem a lot more appealing. But still, gonna be a one of in the main deck, maybe. Maybe an extra one in the sideboard. It just seems really clunky. That's the thing. It just reminds me when I seen the card and everyone's freaking out how good it is. I just think of Counselor's Judgment, and then it tempered my excitement quite a bit.
I think it'll see one in the main, maybe two, not more than that.
Yeah.
And I definitely think the creature's going to be in there.
Yeah.
There's one or two. I don't think the deck has spot to hold.
Yeah, and the deck is tight as it is. So
it is tight.
I'm not sure what they would cut. I'm looking at some recent list. There's one at NZ Eternal Weekend. Not even sure what that is, but a gentleman by the name of Marino Rubio. He's got a list here. You know,
two Mirren Crusaders.
Two Mirren Crusader, one Brahmaz.
The Brahmaz I think can get cut.
Yeah, the Brahmaz, I'm not too excited about that card. and Death and Taxes. I just feel like you have better ways to close out the game. There is Two-Seer Avenger, which have been thrown around by some people that could be a flex spot where you can throw in some recruiters in that slot. And this person here, he's playing also two new Thalia, the Thalia Heretic Cathar.
That's right.
Such a sweet card. But I haven't seen it make too much of a splash in Legacy yet. Do you think it's going to get there, or do you think it's going to slow, people are going to slowly kind of not play it?
Oh, I think Lance players are going to have a Barbarian Ring in there somewhere in their 75.
Just to beat that card. Yeah, that.
I'm not kidding, man. I'm back in Lance, because they're going to want a way to deal with the punishing fire off. What you do is you crop rotate for your, you get rid of that thing.
Huh.
Yeah.
I know you can relate to the struggles of a Lance player.
It's going to be just as bad for me.
Yeah. Every time I watch you play Pox, it just looks like you're playing Lance. But you don't have the punishing package, the punishing fire package. Everything else, it just looks like a lands deck,
yeah,
with a bunch of black, removal. So, and you've been doing well with it. And do you want to talk about your recent finish at Versus Games?
It's not important, but I got second at the States event. I lost to Eldrazi in the finals, and I think I threw game two because I was tired and I was done. But and these things happen.
Yeah, these things happen.
I think the deck's good, for sure. You are going to be similar to lands. Your matchups are going to be... my matchup's slightly different. Like, my Miracles matchup is worse. My Storm matchup is better.
Your Storm matchup is better?
Yeah, I hit him.
Is that enough, though?
It's better than Exploration.
Yeah, that's true. But do you play that Thorn of Amethyst?
I think
Lands play it, right? They play that.
They play the...
Or the Sphere of Resistance.
The Sphere effects and the Chalice in the board. I've seen like one or two Chalices in Lands recently. Like, their board cards are pretty good, but my main... My game one is much higher percentage.
Oh, okay. I got you.
I would say, yeah. I mean, sometimes Lands can just get the quick kill, but...
Yeah.
I like it. It's a good deck. It's got some... I like the character going on there. I've been playing it for a couple of years. I'm scared of Prelay, that's for sure.
I really like that you've been doing really well with Pox, because it's opened my eyes, at least, how good it is, you know, and how very competitive it is still, if you know what you're doing. And, you know, you place well at Channel Fireball's monthly Legacy events as well. So, you know, you doing well at Versus Legacy States was not a surprise to me. And I think, hopefully, not a surprise to a lot of people, especially most Legacy players. I don't think have a very good opinion of Pox or the people who play them, those decks, that deck. So you're doing so well. I think it's a great win for the archetype. And I do want to add, there's, I think, one new Pox player, Phil. Phil's playing Pox now.
Dude, there's another guy on Tuesday who's playing. But those guys are playing Mono Black, which I don't think is nearly as good.
Yeah, I don't like the Mono Black version. I face off against Phil, and he's, the kill condition is just very bad. you know, he's playing Curse's Scroll. I believe he's got some Mishra's Factory now, which I think is pretty cool. But still, it's very reminiscent of the Pox of the old days when you're just taking like 10 turns to kill somebody, maybe 15, 20 turns. So I definitely think that's the... I'm going to get some backlash.
I'm very skeptical of an attrition deck that has Dark Ritual in it. That doesn't make much sense.
though it is sweet. Because when he's playing it against me, I was like, man, this deck brings me back to the old days when people used to play Dark Ritual into Hypnotic Spectre. And then if it resolves and it just connects once, you just feel like it's worth it. It's worth it. And you usually, if you connect for the second time, you pretty much know you're going to win, because if they have removal, they would have got killed it the first time. So, you know what I mean? So, yeah. Anyways, congrats again on the finish. And have you made any changes to the deck?
No, I need to do the deck tech on it on one of these episodes.
Sweet, yeah.
I'm considering switching the Angler for a Curse Scroll for a number of reasons.
Oh, okay.
And I'm considering making the fourth loam a Crucible. In part because of my fear of Freelight, actually.
Interesting. Wow, you're already putting motions in. to deal with the prelate.
I'm a 2 CMC heavy deck. Do you think any other decks are going to have to respond to these two new cards in Death and Taxes? Because, in my opinion, Death and Taxes is going to be one of the more accessible decks in the format, because I don't know if any of it's on the reserve list, and I'm assuming Port's going to get a reprint at some point.
Yeah, I really hope for a Port reprint, just for my own selfish reasons as well. I want to play the deck. I have everything. I made the mistake of selling the ports last year and haven't been able to get them back because they spiked. But I think the prelate, again, Storm might worry about it, but maybe not.
I don't think so. I think they're more worried about Salia. I suppose
I keep thinking of Storm with that.
Right, so hold on. Let me try this. Storm on the, or DNT on the play. Right? They get Thalia out turn 2.
Yeah.
Storm's going to need an extra turn to deal with it.
Right.
And then they drop the prelate and they name 4, most likely.
To deal with Massacre?
To deal with Massacre. Well, I mean, let's say pre-board game.
Okay.
I think 4 is correct because they just can't win.
Oh, also because of the kill con, right. Duh. Yeah. Okay.
And post-board, I think it's much more arguable whether you want to name 1, 2, or 4.
Yeah, post-board, I can see post-board getting real tricky. And, you know, being able to leverage your legacy knowledge and experience into making the right... It's probably going to come down to, like, kind of those when you play Cabal Therapy, you kind of first of all, when it resolves, you just sit there like, okay, now I have to think.
Hilarious.
So it might be one of those decisions where you kind of have to kind of read your opponent and guess what answers they have. Yeah, you're right. It's gonna get real tricky though, because you definitely can name 1, 2, or 4. I'm inclined to name 2. You can stop...
Post-board?
Yeah, post-board. Because you can stop the Tutor. Inferno Tutors. Cabal Rituals. And you can stop Abrupt Decay as well. So, 2 seems good post-board. But there's also a strong argument to just keep naming 4. Like... just name 4. Because then... I can see now that Storm's going to have to deal with Thalia and the Prelate, they might just lean kind of heavy on Massacre now. As before, it didn't seem like they lean as hard on that, you know.
I think, I don't know how many decks are going to have trouble with it. I feel like Show and Tell might have trouble with it.
Okay.
Just pre-laid on 3.
Okay.
Or pre-laid on, I mean, Show and Tell's already got a bad matchup against CAT. And the Revoker on Sneak Attack, I think that's just a lock.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be another lock in addition to the Revoker Caracas.
All right, now, how about Miracles, the bad guy in the room here?
I think, I'm pretty sure 6, regardless, pre-board, post-board.
Oh, okay. 6 regardless. Okay.
Yeah, do you think that's right?
Seems right. I mean, there's not much that you care about. You're happy to just have them 1-for-1 you because they can't really beat you 1-for-1 in you. They have to lean on that Terminus. Yeah. So
yeah.
I think you're gonna be, yeah, 6 seems the way to go. I'm glad this is happening, that DNT is gonna knock Miracles down a peg and kinda help keep things a little bit more balanced. I feel like Miracles has had a good run. And hopefully
yeah,
that run is gonna wane down soon.
I don't think it's been overly dominant recently.
No,
not. I think it's the best deck in the room, but not by much.
Not so. I just have my own bias against Miracles.
Yeah.
But not only that. Not only that. It was still the best deck when I was playing Rug Delver. You know. And 2013.
I got a thought for you.
Yeah.
I think this new Sanctum Prelate card will push Miracles players towards running more of the creatures in the Caracas build. Because it's going to make Venser really good, right? Venser bounce your Prelate.
Yeah.
And then in an ideal world, they have Caracas to bounce the Venser and then Terminus. Right, I mean, that's a lot to ask for, but it could happen.
Right, and, you know, maybe more snappy now. They can flashback the STP. STP's never really that effective against DNT. You just always have Moms and Flick-A-Wisp to protect your dude. But then they don't care, right? Because if you Flick-A-Wisp your Prelate, you're just allowing them to Terminus you right there.
Yeah.
Oh, it's gonna have this. The Prelate is gonna bring out a lot of interesting games, I think, on camera when people are playing at a high level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of play to it. I think it'll give DNT more of an edge, but I definitely don't think it's. It's not gonna make the matchup. It's far from gonna be unwinnable. It'll just be. I think maybe DNT favored, or at the very least, like pretty 50-50.
Right.
I feel like Miracles is slightly advantaged versus DNT, but not by much. But now I feel like it'll be pretty DNT ever so slightly favored. Like low 50 percentages.
Right.
Against players of similar skill level.
Yeah, make it. That's good. Anytime when I hear Miracles having to work harder for their win, it warms my heart. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the Recruiter again, Recruiter of the Guard. So
okay.
you kind of mentioned that it'll be a boon for Alurn. Do you think there'll be an Alurn deck that can take advantage of the Recruiter, because then it's kind of start treading on like the fourth color?
I think that
because they don't traditionally play white, from my understanding.
Right, but are they playing four colors right now? The Alurn build. They splash red to be able to cast Recruiter, right?
Right.
Like, barely splash it.
Right. Yeah, my understanding, they play bug colors, right? And
they play bug colors.
Yeah.
With a Taiga. Yeah, a single Taiga. Like, this list that I just pulled up had one red source on the dual land. I don't know. I feel like...
Wouldn't that just make your deck just even more kind of prone to some stifles and wasteland kind of getting you?
Yeah, but I feel like I don't play Lurin, and this deck has a lot of ins and outs.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how much of a stretch it would be to run. I think you want two recruiters to make your combo still resilient. I mean, Imperial recruiters. But I think you could then run three Recruiter of the Guards, because you want to have two Imperial recruiters to have redundancy against one removal effect, right, and getting Dreamstalker online.
Right.
Because Dreamstalker really protects your combo, right? It makes it right. more complicated, like up and down, up and up, and up and down.
Right. Just so people know what we're talking about. So the recruiters can get the Dreamstalker, and a Dreamstalker is a 1/5?
That's right.
2 CC creature. It's one generic and a blue, I believe. And when it comes into play, you can bounce a creature in play back to your hand.
Yeah, it doesn't target, which is Mikey taught that to me, and that's obvious if you read the card, but I didn't realize how important that was until I thought about how do you stop this thing.
Right.
Because you don't see this deck very much, despite it top 8ing at a River, Seattle.
Yeah, at the end of last year. There's a person that play it at Channel Fireball, and I think he's top 8ed the last one of the more recent months with the deck, and he seems to be very familiar with the deck, the ins and outs of it. So yeah, I mean, the deck still perform. People just don't play it, I guess, because of the cost.
Yeah, just 4 recruiters is expensive, but I'm starting to think that you could still have the redundancy with 2 recruiters and Imperial recruiter and maybe 2 or 3 recruiter of the guard. I mean, okay. They run a Volgas stronghold. I mean, that's kind of, I don't know what that function is, but you know, if that's a black white instead, or you can get your white splash there. I don't know. The lands definitely be complicated to get 5 color.
Yeah.
But you're not necessarily. I don't know how often you even cast the recruiter.
Yeah, if you're not banking on, if you don't need to, I think there'll be times when you do need to cast a recruiter.
I'm in no way
know what the hell I'm talking about when it comes to Lurin. It's a very tricky deck from what I could see. So
you got the 4 death rate too.
Yeah, that's true. Deathrite Shaman, always pulling the overtime work in every single deck. Every single deck, Deathrite Shaman is just putting in work, man. I'm serious. That card. I wanted to talk about this other card. It's called, I don't think you probably paid attention to it. I didn't until Denny brought it up to me. It's called Palace Jailer. It's 2 generic, white, 2/2 creature, human soldier. When it comes into play, you become the monarch. When it comes into play, exile target creature and opponent control until an opponent becomes the monarch.
Okay.
So yeah, ideally.
What type of the same plan?
I know. you're probably thinking, I got the nerve to talk bad about Prelate at 3 casting costs. This is 4.
How'd you read me like a book, man?
The tone of your voice kind of gave it away. and I don't blame you. It's pretty hypocritical to criticize Prelate, but kind of digging this card. So I'm thinking this could be really good in a control mirror, or maybe even in Death and Taxes, because when it comes into play, you become the monarch and you get to draw the card at the end of your turn. So if the opponent doesn't kill this creature on the spot, you just draw a card, so it replaces itself. And the monarch thing, you know, against a control deck, they're not gonna have the ability to become the monarch by attacking you, because like Miracles, they don't run that many creatures. So for, you know, 2-3 turns, if they don't kill this thing, you're going to be drawing cards. And they don't have a way to, like I said, to gain the Monarch for themselves. So they literally have to kill it, or that's really it. And it also exile creature, you know, until they become the Monarch. So if they don't gain the Monarchy, you get to a free removal spell, essentially. So
I didn't notice this. Yeah, I overlooked this. I can see that.
It's got a lot of value.
The Eldrazi and Taxes list is going around.
I'm aware that it exists. I don't know the exact list itself, but I hear that they run the Eldrazi Displacer.
So they run like 4 Thought Knots as well.
Okay.
They have a bunch of the Soul Lands.
Okay.
And they're running, did I say Chalice? I probably said that already. They don't run Bile.
Okay.
Makes
sense. If you're running Chalice, you're not going to run Bile.
I can see an argument for this in that deck.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe even as a one-of in Death and Taxes, and you can put in a sideboard, and you can fetch it up with the Recruiter, that'd be really sweet.
Just like for the Mirror?
The Mirror, yeah, or even against Miracles. Yeah.
My hesitation against Miracles is you're not going to want to put Vile on 4.
True.
I guess it's a human, though, so Cavern on Human is popular in that deck, so maybe it's not so terrible.
Yeah, putting it on 4 doesn't seem like a big cost, but I think as the game progresses, you're going to feel like that was a big cost to lose it off of 3. But yeah, you know, when you're going up against Miracle, the game's going to go long, and then you're going to have 4 mana. That's fun. It is a lot of mana, though, in Legacy. You know, it's quite a bit of mana.
Yeah. It draws a card every turn.
Yeah.
It draws a card every turn.
Yeah. It's... And the thing is, Danny kind of pointed out the removal of the creature is very good because... If they do, say, have a Snapcaster on board, you play this, you remove the Snapcaster, they no longer have the tools to gain a Monarchy back. So they literally have to have a removal spell. And if you have a Mom, you're cool.
That's true.
I'm magical Christmas landing this whole situation, but...
I did not notice this card.
Yeah, it's... Okay. I feel like it has a lot of potential to be really spicy in certain decks. Maybe even outside of Death and Taxes. Maybe Maverick even, you know, for their mirror. Or any mid-range mirrors that they have to play. I think they can jam this in there. Yeah,
I can see it, sure. I unfortunately can't green some for it, but yep.
Yeah.
Maybe put your Recruiter. I don't know.
So,
Want to wrap this one up?
Sure. All right, guys. Thank you for joining us. This is, again, our 4th episode. It's a little bit short. And I hope you guys enjoyed. If you guys have any feedback, please shoot us an email at LegacyLandscapePodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the shorter episodes and a more focus on a specific deck. We're happy to do deck techs, and we can even bring on some of our friends that have been playing their specific decks for a long time, so they can talk with a lot more knowledge than we can. And yeah, so send us an email and let us know. And we'll try to keep the episodes more steady each week instead of being in and out like this. So thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Yeah, we'll be back with more white creatures for Legacy, apparently.
Just the best. Night.